show today.
Blog Talk Radio.
I am your host, Wanda McKinley, along with co-host Stephanie Kennedy Alford. I am the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization. Our purpose is to provide a stable environment for abused and battered men, women, and children by providing temporary shelter, counseling, and employment training. We want to help men and women transition from abusive situations to being self-sufficient individuals in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower men and women and to show them that they can and will survive and thrive in society on their own, as well as to uplift them and provide them with a new perspective of what a normal life should be by enhancing and elevating their lives. I am a survivor of domestic violence. I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by my biological father as well as my stepfather. My ex-husband was also very abusive. He was sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive, and I was with him for 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help men, women, and children who have walked or may still be walking in my shoes. Hello, Stephanie. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful. What about you?
I'm good. It's the beginning of our 7th year Passion and Life anniversary celebration that starts tonight. So I'm looking forward to 4 days of churching. Looking forward to it. And I got to sing 3 of those days. So that's what I have going on here for the remainder of the week. So what you got for us today?
Well, we can go ahead and talk about our fundraisers. We Are Survivors. We currently have several fundraisers that we can use support from everyone. We currently have our Kroger Plus Reward fundraiser. If you currently have a Kroger Plus Reward card, if you will connect it to We Are Survivors, or if you don't, if you will currently get one and go to Kroger.com and register it and link it to We Are Survivors each quarter, according to what you spend, Kroger's will give us a donation. If you have a Tom Thumb Rewards card, they will do the same thing. If you go to TomThumb.com and link it to We Are Survivors. If you also have a, I went blank, I apologize. can't believe it. Had so much going on this week. Help me out, Wanda.
So, Mrs. Kroger's, Tom Thumb, right, CPN, we also have a Compass Bank.
Yeah, Compass Bank is what I was trying to think of. If you have a Compass Bank account, if you link it to We Are Survivors, or if you get open a Compass Bank account and link it to We Are Survivors, they will also give us a donation. The CPN discount card that you can get discounts all over the U.S., it's only $15, and half of that comes to We Are Survivors. And then we also have the photography, which I'll let you discuss that one because you're great because you've already experienced that one, so I'll let you discuss the photography fundraising that we have.
Yes. It is actually called the Purple City Project, and it is a domestic violence awareness photo shoot campaign, and you can book your personal or professional shoot where you actually get to either wear something purple or take your picture with a purple background. And the photographer's name is City, and he has several different packages. The two that I'm going to talk about are the two most popular ones, which is the $55 package. And it has it's a 20-minute.
Okay.
Poses.
Wanda.
And, uh-huh.
You kind of went blank for a second.
Oh, okay. So, okay, I'll come back with a $55 package where it's a 20-minute session for up to four people, and it is unlimited shots. You have one look, and you pick two of your favorite pictures. Then you have the $80 package, which is actually valued at $160. It's a 45-minute session, up to four people, unlimited shots. You have two looks, which means you have to change your clothes twice. Actually, you have two outfits. And four edits, which you get to pick four of your favorite pictures. So like I said, like Stephanie said a minute ago, I've actually had the privilege of being involved and actually did one of these photo shoots, and it's really fun. I actually did mine in November. And as I've said before, I've yet to actually pick out my all four favorites. That's just how hard it is for me to pick out all four. But a portion of the proceeds will be donated to We Are Survivors that we may be able to provide hotel rooms for men, women, and children who are in need of help. A lot of people really don't understand that there are limited beds available in Dallas County as well as Tarrant County, and we're learning more about Collin County as we go. And so for us, not being able to find placement for someone that really needs it is really heart-wrenching. So the funds that we do collect from different fundraising events will allow us to, as a last resort, be able to remove that person from that situation by putting them into a hotel room. So we hope that you all will take the time out to participate in one or two, three, four, five, or all of the fundraising events that we may have. We do have some very big projects that are coming up really soon, and we will be able to talk about that more at a later date. But I just wanted to reach out to our listening audience and to let them know that we really do need you all's support. God is really opening doors for us, and we just want to make sure we're positioned to help these women that we receive phone calls from, because we do receive phone calls all the time, 24 hours, 7 days a week. And we actually had, she was on our show, I would say probably about a month ago, and I received a very disturbing phone call from her when she found out that her daughter was being raped by the man that helped raise her. And I did talk to her Monday, because she called me about a week and a half ago. I did talk to her Monday of this week, and he has bailed out of jail. So I'll just let you all know that women do call, children do need our help, and so it's really important for you all to help out and support in any way possible. Just even if you could be a listening ear for someone calling and they need spiritual help, they need that phone call for prayer. It's just that it can be something that doesn't cost any money. All it takes is that 5 minutes, the 10 minutes of you praying for someone or you being that listening ear for someone, just so that person knows that they're not alone and there's someone that really does care. You can even, you know, just help out with that. And like I say, even by doing that, if you want to be a part of that, just let Stephanie and I know. And so that way, you know, we have someone that needs prayer or have someone that needs something that we can pick up the phone and call. But today we have part two of our wonderful guest, Ms. Carolyn Hudson, who was on last week. And for those who may be listening this week, I'll have her kind of recap just a little bit from last week so that she can bring us on in for the closing this week. And as I said last week, the floor is yours. And let's hear it. How are you today?
I am doing wonderful, and I am ready to get going because there is just so much, and I know that I need to recap quickly. Are we yes. ready? Ready?
Yes, ma'am. We are. Yes.
Okay. I started last week stating that in October of 2008, I was raped by an elder of my church who had AIDS. I want to bring it back to when I was age 2, and I'm going to be very, very quick. I believe that the assault started at age 2 because that was when fear came into me, and I also started stuttering because I used to see a silhouette of a man in my bedroom door. Throughout the years, I was assaulted by various people. It didn't matter where I was, what I wore. It didn't matter anything. One was at a hospital emergency room, hospital operating room, a manager of an apartment building, a date rape, a marriage rape at 8 months pregnant. None of that mattered. The main thing was that I was a very vulnerable person, and the predator can pick out somebody that is vulnerable, either physically or mentally or emotionally or whatever. I had a lot of health issues, so that also made me vulnerable. Fast forward to 2005, and this is key. I have had 3 strokes and one heart attack since 2005. But in 2005, I had a stroke. While I was in the hospital, my mind was attacked, and I could feel my mind being sucked out of my head. It was as if I was laying there in the bed. I could see what was happening, but I could do nothing about it. I just watched the words being sucked out, and I could just feel my mind being sucked out, and that was part of the stroke. I could not. I didn't know what to do, and then I heard this voice say, "Speak scriptures." So I started speaking scriptures because there were scriptures inside me. You can't speak what is not inside you. I gave my life to the Lord in 1981, and I have been putting scriptures in me since then. So when I had that stroke, the Spirit of God inside me said, start speaking scriptures. And scriptures started coming up in my spirit, not in my mind, because my mind was going, but inside mm-hmm. my spirit, scriptures started coming up. I can do all things through Christ. Greater is He. I have the mind of Christ. And they just kept coming up and coming up, and I would just speak them, but I was getting tired. And so I said, I think I'm going to stop speaking them. I think I'm just going to think them. So what happens? I fall asleep. But when I woke up, I had my right mind back. I had my right mind back. That taught me that there is a difference between the spirit of your mind and the soul of your mind. My soul was messed up. My mind was leaving. But the Spirit of God is not attached to that part. The spirit man inside me was alive and it was well, and it was heaven talking to me, telling me, quote the scriptures. It had nothing to do with my natural mind at all. It was the spirit mind that gave me my life back. So fast forward to May of 2008, I had another stroke. And then October, I was raped by this elder. I was still healing from the third stroke. So again, I was attacked. I was I was in a vulnerable state. I was attacked, but I did the best that I could. Fear came into me. That stroke, no, that rape did what nothing else in my life could do. I believe that throughout my life, I haven't been attacked with fear, stuttering, two bad marriages, health issues, but nothing could stop me from speaking because God gifted me to teach, and I also wrote books. So I still talked in spite of everything that was happening to me, depression, everything throughout my life. But that rape did something nothing else could do. It shut my mouth. It shut my mouth.
Wow.
I could not speak. I could not pray. I could not read the word. I could not teach. I did what I had to do. And as soon as my time was over, I could not do these things. I lost my memory and a lot. I could not do. I didn't care about my life. I didn't know what to do. So for 5 years, from 2008 to 2013, I went through PTSD. I went through depression. I went through fears. I went through memory loss. I went through so much because of that rape. As I said earlier, I lost my memory for maybe about 6 months.
Wow.
My mind was like mush. Everything was scattered inside my head. My body was separated from my brain. I told myself, I'm going to do this. I'm going to serve, because I was a licensed minister at that time. I'm going to serve God on my Sunday, on my Wednesday. Nobody's going to stop me from serving God. My brain said that, but my body shut down. I could not do all the things that I wanted to do. I could not do. I would come home when it first happened. I could not cook. I could not clean. I could not wash the dishes. It might take me a week to wash the dishes. I would come home from work, go in my bedroom, watch TV, and then the TV would start watching me. And I would just wake up the next morning, do the same thing all over again, go to work, do what I had to do, come home. But through this, God kept me. He kept me. There were some nights when I thought that I was going to die, because I have a heart issue. And after the rape, I felt a lot of stroke symptoms. Some days when I went to work, I couldn't go down to lunch because I was afraid of what was going to happen, and I would just sit at my desk and just praise God. I would take deep breaths. Sometimes at night I could not breathe. And then the spirit of fear would come in. And then I really could not breathe. And I would just say, Lord, help me through the night. Help me through the night. And this went on for 4 months, maybe a couple of years. But the one undergirding thing was I trusted God.
Mm-hmm.
I trusted God no matter what I felt, no matter what I felt, no matter what people said, the underlining thing was I trusted God. I did not blame God for what happened. I know that when the incident was happening, for some reason I knew that this man could not go no farther than what God allowed him. because he could have did a lot more damage to me, but it was as if I felt angels around me, where he could only do so much. And I believe that he was trying to give me AIDS.
Wow.
Because of certain things that he did to make sure that I would get infected. There were certain things he did. So I believe that he was trying to get me AIDS, give me AIDS, and it had been alleged that he had already given multiple women AIDS. And that's in that might be in the court records. I do not know. But so what everything else in my life could not do, this thing shut my mouth for maybe five years. I left church in October of 2010, because I was having so many problems at church, and every time I would go to church, I would leave church crying because I didn't have the support. I would leave church crying. So one Monday, I felt the Lord tell me that was my last day at that church. And when he told me that, I went to tell the ministerial leader. As I was leaving the parking lot of that church, I got a vision of me walking out the parking lot. Though I was driving, the vision had me walking out the parking lot, and there were these big boulders on my shoulders. And these boulders were just falling off, and they were crashing to the ground. As I walked, they would crash, and then another one would crash, and then another one would crash. They were like weights were just lifted off of me, and I could see Jesus in the horizon waiting for me in my living room. And when I got home and walked into my living room, I felt the Lord's embrace so strong. And he said he was going to take care of me. He had to reteach me. He had to retrain me. And he was so embracing. It didn't matter that I wasn't praying. Didn't matter that I wasn't studying. Didn't matter that I wasn't reading the word. He embraced me with his love so strong. It was better than the day that I got saved. And that was an awesome miracle day. But this day was so much better, and for 10 months, we had a honeymoon. I would get instant revelation. I would just read a scripture, and I would think, I wonder what that scripture means. Instantly, he would tell me. Mm. We would talk every single day. Because there was no hindrance. It was straight communication. No kind of hindrance, interferences. In the way, no type of legalism, no type of religion. It was him and me for 10 months. And when he sent me to a church, I didn't want to go because I was so in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
he did so much. I did not want to step in a church, but I was obedient because I knew that was him. 10 months. He said I had to forget what I was taught. He said, You can't go to church. And I thought, what am I gonna do? What am I gonna do tomorrow? My God, what am I gonna do Wednesday? What am I gonna do Saturday? Because I was one of those people that was in church all the time. And it was so hard for me not to go. My son called me one Sunday, and he said, Mom, what are you doing? And I said, I'm sitting at the mall outside looking at everybody go by. He said, you're what? Because he knew me. I don't do that. I said, I'm just sitting here watching people go by, and I'm just reading. And so he said, am I talking to my mother? Because I was church all the time. But God had to teach me. God had to restore me. God had to rebuild me. That was a miracle in itself. In September, I told you that it took 5 years. I went to work. I did the normal things. But see, nobody knows what you're going through when you go home. Because
right.
When you go home, you are by yourself. I mean, we can put on a good face,
mm-hmm.
a good face, put on a real good face. But from like March of 2013 until about August, I was in the worst hopeless state I could ever be. I had severe depression. I didn't want to end my life, but I was saying, Lord, there has got to be another choice. I don't want to live. I don't want to die. There's got to be another choice. And I tried so hard to think of another way, and there is no way. You do one or the other. And I didn't care whether I woke up the next day. I didn't care about anything. I was just tired of it all, with the health issues and with the depression coming and going, with the hopelessness coming and going. I was just tired. I was just tired, and I didn't care. I did not care. And then one day in September, God said, I heard it in my spirit, it's time. It's time. And when he said that, I knew something was about to change in my life. I didn't know what it was, but I knew the voice of God when he said, it's time. And it was as if he said, you made it through. The enemy threw the worst he could throw at you. Because as I said, in those last months, I didn't care about anything. Living or dying, I did not care. I was just breathing. But when he said it was time, it was like instantly things started changing. The depression lifted. Joy came in my soul. The Spirit of God started directing me to do certain things, and I started doing them. One of the things he told me to do was to start Silent Screams Incorporated. I didn't do that on my own.
Mm-hmm.
He woke me up early in the morning, like about 2:30, and said, I want you to start an organization, Silent Screams. But then he said, at this time, because I tried to start it earlier when he first told me, he said, this time I want you to register it as a legal organization, a 501c3. And then he told me what to do. He told me courses I needed to take. And it was like my life was totally different in an instant. In an instant. And since then, he has continued doing miracles, especially with silent screams. Now, last time, the time went by so fast. I'm going to stop right here unless you want me to continue. I'll continue.
Oh no, we want to hear your story. We want to hear what God has done for you. It's always been, I've been told by many, well, I'm from a bishop out of Atlanta, and when you said for me that God told you to start Silent Screams, I can relate to that because We Are Survivors was formed because God told me to form We Are Survivors.
Yeah.
I did not have a desire to tell my story. I didn't have a desire to do any of what I'm doing. So I can really relate to that. And
yeah.
It's just like when people ask me about how and why I started We Are Survivors, and I just,
I have to be transparent and be honest. And my thing is, well, it wasn't, I didn't have an option. God told me this is what you have to do. And he also told me the same with you with the 501c3, because I fought the idea for about 2 years, almost 2 years. And then, like, in 2014, God was like, just legally form it. And I'll take care of you. And so with you, why you saying that, I was just like, wow, because I heard the same thing.
This is God, and it is a faith move. So let me tell you a little bit more about what he did, and then why God said call it silent screams. Because most survivors are silent. The news stories that you hear on the news, those are mainly survivors who were attacked by a stranger, or by a date rape or something. But most of the survivors are like acquaintance survivors. They are attacked by a family member, a brother, a father, a cousin, or they are attacked by someone they know, a boss, a military leader, a teacher. Those are acquaintances. But silent, we started silent screams because I know the comfort of being silent. I know that side of an assault, but I also know the cost of being silent. I have heard so many stories from survivors who were attacked. I want to share one. This is a lady who was in her 40s or 50s, and she did share with me that when she was a teenage girl, she was assaulted by the church youth choir leader.
Wow.
And no one knew about it. But even at the age 40 and 50, I could see she still had the depression, she still had the pain, she still had the sorrow. She had not been healed, though this happened when she was a teenager. Sometime after she told me that story, a couple of years later, she came up to me and said that the person that assaulted her is in the paper again. There is another teenage girl that is pressing charges. And
wow.
I suggested to her, I said, it would help if you could just call and tell them that it happened to you. See, this is 40 years later. The same person is doing the same thing. So you can imagine how many victims he has had.
Right.
But this one young girl decided to press charges. She lost the case because there was not enough evidence, because there is never enough evidence. But my friend never did call either. Bring it back to my case. I had been silent for years until this 2008 rape. I decided to press charges, and I knew the cost of speaking out. I knew the pain of speaking out. I would be public because I went to a very well-known church. I would be public, but I said I did nothing wrong, and I can't keep silent anymore. I said, if I keep silent, it will keep happening to me. I can't keep silent anymore. At the time when I was assaulted, I did not know this man had AIDS. I did not know. Because I spoke up, an investigation started. They contacted him. I told them that we need to catch him, we need to trick him or something. They contacted him and set up a meeting with him that gave him an opportunity to run. He left the state. One of the things I found out was that the people that were investigating my incident, they did not believe me. So they took their own slow time and they allowed him to run. And then even after they found out he had AIDS, they still did not believe me. Because, see, I was celibate. And I guess people think woman can't be celibate anymore. I was celibate for years. So it was between me and another elder of the church. We caught him because we knew he liked women and money. So he knew me, but then he didn't know that I knew her. So, like, she communicated with him, and we got him to finally tell us where he was, his address, his bank account, everything. I called the police here. They called the police in the state he was at. They found him, picked him up, and brought him back to Texas. He is in prison now. That is because I spoke up. I also found out that there was one woman who was infected, and there was a possible two others who were at the trial that were infected by him, alleged. I have to say that. So if I did not speak up, because this man was targeting female leaders of the church, what would happen if I did not speak up? He would still be out there infecting people. He would still be out there infecting people. He had no respect for the Bible, no respect for the leader of the church, and surely no respect for a woman. So that was a miracle in itself. It is very, everybody cannot speak up, and that is why Silent Screams is here. We are the voice for the voiceless. I understand why you can't speak up, but I also understand the power of speaking up. It empowers you. You are taking your life back. You are taking your strength back when you do speak up. Predators know that the one thing that keeps victims silent is fear. Fear is not of God, but it's fear that keeps victims silent. Fear for whatever reason, embarrassment, guilt, losing a job, being kicked out of the military, being put to shame, embarrassed, or whatever. Predators use fear. But when there's no fear in you, like there was no fear in me this last time, there was anger. I said, no, not again. Not again. I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. He is not going to get away with this. So there was no fear, but you have to be willing to go through what you have to go through when you speak up, because you may have to go to trial, and they're going to open up everything. They're going to check everything. They're going to say everything that they can about you. They told me his attorney said that I knew he had AIDS and I wanted to have sex anyways because I was celibate.
Wow.
That did not make sense because, number one, the guy was extremely ugly, and number two, I serve God. And there is a reason why I serve God. I do not play with God. I loved him that much.
Yeah.
And for something like that to come along, and I knew that was not God. I knew the man did not respect the Bible because I taught the Word of God. And as we would talk, he would just give me scriptures out of context, wrong interpretations. So I knew something was wrong, but I wish I had known it sooner.
Wow.
And okay.
It's amazing because of what you have gone through, what God has allowed you to experience in your life, the reason why Silent Screams exist, because there are a lot of, and I would be still one of those individuals that is suffering in silence, and we
yes.
think that we're okay. We think that because no one knows or it's not happening or it hasn't happened in years that we're okay, because as victims and survivors, because of the characteristics we have in common, we do suppress, we do make excuses,
yes.
we do
yes.
just overlook what happened. And as long as it's not in our face, as long as we don't have to see it or physically deal with it, then we think we're okay. And for so many years, I really thought I was okay.
Yeah.
I know that initially a lot of people, associates and friends that initially met me, thought I was just a witch. They really thought I was and for me, because of the defense mechanism I had, because of what I had gone through, I really didn't care
yeah.
what you thought. And I didn't realize that was me really still acting out because
yes.
of what happened to me.
Yes.
And
yes, I had a controlling spirit. Yes.
Yes. This
yes.
walk has shown me that, Wanda, you still have a lot more healing, and I really just begun to heal. I remember
yes.
about 2 years ago, I applied to be a CASA volunteer. And so they take you through this informational class, you fill out all these forms, and then you have a one-on-one interview. And for me, the reason why I didn't get picked was they asked me about my healing process. And, when did I, start healing? How long has it been since, I've taken a hold of what happened to me? And at that time, it had really been less than 2 months. They said, ma'am, you have
yeah.
a lot of healing to do.
Yeah.
They were like,
yeah.
come back and see us in a couple of years. And at the time, I didn't know what they meant.
Uh-huh.
But
people do not realize
time,
it takes years.
It does.
It takes years. And Silent Screams has some excellent resources, faith-based resources that really help women. One of them is Arise International. That one I would highly recommend.
Gwendolyn
yes. Jones.
Gwendolyn.
I would highly recommend that. She and I are good friends, but I see the woman when they start the class. I have seen them, but when they go through the entire course, they are totally different. They are free. They are healed. They are happy. And then women
wow.
who don't, women and men who don't go through the healing process, like you, I thought I was fine. But I had
mm-hmm.
a controlling spirit. I did not trust men. I hated men. And I knew it was because of the rapes, but I thought it was okay. I can take care of myself. I pushed things down, and we pushed things down. But at some point, you never know when a trigger is going to hit you.
Right.
You can be 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, and something hits. And you never know why you have gone through 2, 3, and 4 marriages, why your marriages do not work, why are you timid, why are you overprotective with your mm-hmm. children. A lot of that goes yes. back to when you were assaulted. Men as well, we have a men's page we are working on also. So men who have been assaulted as boys have the same pain, the same bleeding. They have the same tears. I have seen them. And these are men that are 40, 50, 60 years old, and they still are not healed. And you can tell some of them cannot keep a job. Some of them have some anger issues. So the men that were assaulted as children, they go through the same thing, and they are more silent than the women are. I want
yes,
to get
they
to
are.
The men. I want to get to the men. And this is a miracle for me because don't talk to me about a man. Men are this, men are that, and
mm-hmm.
men are the other. I could not stand them. So for the Lord to put it on my heart to have a men's section also, that is nobody but him. Nobody but him, because they are crying too and they need help too, but they are more silent. And it is harder for
yeah.
them to come out than anyone else. But most of the survivors are like what you and I were. They're silent
mm-hmm.
and they suppress. Those are the ones I want to get to. Those are the ones that I want to reach, because there is hope out there. You are not alone. It is not your fault. You did nothing wrong. You didn't put it in that man's head or woman's head to do what they did to you. Don't allow it to take any more of your life. I mean, they need to know they are not alone. There is a community out there that supports survivors, and there is so much love in that community. So much love. You just got to take the first step,
yeah,
and just call somebody, or just go to a support group, or just call me, or call Ms. Wanda. Take the first step.
Yeah, because like it's and as Stephanie and I have learned as we really have walked this journey together, and acknowledging and growing with the healing process, it is pressure release. And
yes.
like I said, I really didn't realize that I had so much healing to do. And now that I have begun my healing process, I have answers as to why I acted this way, or
yes.
why I did this,
yes.
or why
yes.
the words, because even my mom said that my language has changed a lot, which I didn't realize. She said, but you cursed a lot a while back. She's like, you cursed like a sailor. And I was like, me? Are you kidding me? She's like, you had, for my mom to say that means I was cussing around you too. But
yeah.
I was like, my mouth was like, she said, it's like you had so much anger. You really didn't even know. Yeah. She's like, you cursed so much. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
They heard
yeah.
say that. I was just like, so you just, we think we're okay. And
yes, we do.
We really aren't.
We're not.
And being
so
around.
I'm sorry, go on.
I was just saying, being around survivors, being around people that can relate, being around people that won't judge, being around people that can support you is phenomenal. And it is so needed for your process. And what God has shown me is, yes, there are counselors out there, there are licensed people that survivors go talk to, but there's nothing like sitting down with someone that can say to you or them, I understand that because this is how I felt.
Yes.
It is, it's so amazing versus someone that is remembering a homework assignment that they did in class and they're answering a question that fits your scenario. It's totally different to have someone
totally
that can walk, that can walk with you and truly say, I understand, and mean, I understand.
Uh-huh.
And it's just
but
with the passion. Go ahead.
Yes. The survivor knows that. One thing survivors acquire after they have been raped, they are in tune to safe places. They are in tune to who they can trust. And like when you are speaking to the survivor, they can hear the empathy in your voice, and they are drawn to it because they know I can talk to her. She knows what I'm talking about. She is a safe place. At the same time, if you start talking and you start blaming or something, a survivor will shut you down. They will shut down so quick. They will be so cold. They will want to get out of there as soon as possible because you don't understand. You want to use,
that's
one
true.
Of my things was people wanted to use a lot of scripture with me. And I was hurting. They weren't reaching my heart. They were doing what you said, a textbook, except the textbook was the Bible, and it was not hitting. It was not hitting, but then there were some who were, but they had a spirit of empathy. They understood. But if you are just going by what is said, and your heart is not connecting to their pain, they're going to shut you down.
Yes.
Shut down
really quick, and that goes really in any aspect because I did not, if I didn't know you, didn't feel comfortable with you, didn't trust you, you're only going to get so many words out of me. My face would probably say more than my mouth would say because I'm like, I don't trust you, I don't know you, I'm not trying to get to know you, I'm not trying to get close to you, and it doesn't matter to me. And so now the people that have known me for so many years, when they initially met me, they didn't like me. They just, I was like, oh, God, here comes Wanda. And then after the fact, it was always something I said or did. And my response was, I don't care. But now I can say, okay, this is why I was that way 13 years ago, or this is why I was that way 12 years ago, or this is why I did this, because now I know why I acted the way I acted.
Yes.
And it was my defense mechanism. It was to protect me, because for me, the two people that God put on this earth that's supposed to protect you and the two individuals that no matter what is your safe haven were the two that abused me. So if my parents...
Would
have used me, what would a perfect stranger do? You ought to do the same or worse. So for me, try to make a friend. I don't need a friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have my parents.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know,
and they don't understand why so many people are angry. So why so many youth and young kids are angry or why they run away. And it is horrible when they go to court about a case, and then the court system sends them back into the situation because there's not enough proof. That breaks my heart because the child is sent back into the abusive environment. What are they going to do?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And because a lot of people don't really understand or the workload is overwhelming, and that's another thing that
I've
heard when I do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have
enough
power.
Proof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The proof to.
So
we just have
a deep subject.
Yes, and we have a lot of work ahead of us, because as one of my friends said, I don't really repeat exactly what he said, because I was like, really, but I understood what he was trying to his point. There is, right now, domestic violence has always been something that has happened. It's always been an epidemic. It's just been always swept under the rug.
Yeah.
And now it's really in the forefront, and really I think the NFL with the athletes and all of the media coverage that has happened in the last 5 years with the superstars of the sports world has really brought it even more so that people are now really paying attention to it, because it's always happened, but now you have people catching stuff on cameras. You have women now that are actually speaking out like, no, you will not do this to me, because it's always happened. And
it's,
so
it
now it's, you know, people are like, it's an epidemic. No, it's always been an epidemic. It's just in everybody's face right now. And until we change laws, it's going to continue. And it's not getting better. It's actually getting worse.
Until we speak up.
We're here.
Okay. Until we speak up and until the laws are changed, but the community has to speak up.
Yes.
You have to
they
speak.
They do.
You have to say something.
If we don't, it's gonna continue. Will we be able to stop every case, every scenario? No, we will not.
No.
But working diligently to put things in place to help men, women, and children, because you know, for we are survivors, our focus is the children just as much as the men and women, because these children grow up seeing these things and they're going to repeat what they saw if they don't receive help, if they don't receive counseling, if they are not rewired, they're going to grow up and repeat the same thing. So if we don't treat the children as children, we will be treating them as adults.
Yes, exactly.
And
exactly.
It happens more so than not. And I've talked to some people that are very proud that they broke the cycle, because they are aware. As a child growing up looking at that, being around it, you think that's normal. And unfortunately, we have women and men that believe it's normal because that's how they were raised.
That's all they knew.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they knew. I thought that fear was normal. And depression was normal. I thought it was normal all my life. But I found out later, it's not normal. Every single day, depressed. I thought it was normal. But it wasn't. But it was my normal. Not now. Not now. Not now. Not at all.
Wow. And there we go. We got our 90-second warning has come already. Once again, I do want to thank you, Ms. Hudson. Louie, love and enjoy talking to you. And I will be calling you off the record because we need to be doing some things together.
I believe we will.
There's a lot of things that are coming up. And I do know Gwendolyn's having her, are you attending her fashion show that's happening in April?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
I'm
sending that.
Okay. Yes. I'll be there as well. So I'm looking forward to that. I do want to thank everyone that has listened today. Feel free to contact me or Stephanie with any questions or comments or survivor stories. We did submit our first two articles to Finland this week, so I'm really excited about that. So we're always looking for survivor stories and even informational stories and articles to submit to our sister partnership that's in Finland and Nigeria. The direct number to the organization is 214-454-2933. Our email address is weareSurvivorsFoundation@gmail.com. I want to thank God for you listening, and I pray that today on this show something was said that touches your heart. We are here to help, to support, to guide, listen, and to lift you in the name of Jesus. We worship his holy name. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.